Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
He came to Jesus and he said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." That's glorious. He had not a single doubt about the ability of Jesus to heal. His only question was whether or not Jesus was willing. But listen, that's a pretty big deal to look at a man and say, "Look, I believe you can cure the incurable. You can do what nobody else can do. My condition is absolutely impossible with man, but I believe it's possible with you."
Healing leprosy was such an outrageous idea, probably comparable to raising someone from the dead. There was no reversing it. It truly was a death sentence. Today, we will study the encounter of a leper with Jesus. As far as we know, there was no record of any leper ever being healed. Yet this guy comes to Jesus so filled with faith and confidence that he had the power to heal him if he was willing. Pastor David will teach about his heart of faith and Jesus' passion to heal and restore people. Now, here's Pastor David with part two of his message, Witness of the Leper.
Peter and his companions were experienced fishermen on the Sea of Galilee. Surely they had had big catches before. This was nothing unusual in that sense, to have a good fishing day. Don't you think many times Peter came home to the wife there in Capernaum and said, "Wow, what a great night we had last night." But nevertheless, there was something about what happened at this time in the place, the extent of the catch, the cooperation from the other people, the unlikeliness of the surroundings. You'd say, "Listen, I've had good nights fishing, but I've never had an afternoon when some guy's been shouting over the water for 2 hours with all those people around in such adverse circumstances. To catch that kind of haul in those kind of circumstances at the word of that man, it makes me bow down and worship him." Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to remind you that a short time before this, Peter was bedside when Jesus healed his mother-in-law. It's not like he had never seen anything miraculous from the hands of Jesus before. Yet there was something so special, so powerful, so unique about this whole circumstance that what did it make Peter do? Look at what it says, verse 8. It says he fell down at Jesus' knees. This miracle of the blessed catch made Peter worship Jesus and surrender himself to him. And then he said some very precious words. You saw it right there in verse 8. He said, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." When Peter saw and understood the great power of Jesus as it was displayed in Jesus' expertise in an area where rightfully he should have known nothing about this. What does a carpenter or a preacher know about fishing? Just about nothing. But something about the whole surrounding made Peter understand his own spiritual bankruptcy compared to Jesus himself. Peter knew it. He had hardly met Jesus, yet he knew some very important things about Jesus. Just think about that amazing statement right there. Look at what he understands about Jesus already. First of all, Peter knew that Jesus was Lord. "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." I'll tell you what else he knew about himself. Peter knew himself to be a man. "I'm a man. There's something different about you, Jesus. I can tell you're a man, but somehow you're more than a man." And then you could say this, and I hope you understand what I mean when I say this. If Peter looked at Jesus and saw someone who was in some way more than a man, he looked at himself and he understood there was somehow less than a man there. Because how did Peter describe himself? You saw it in the verse. It's right there in verse 8. "Depart from me, O Lord, for I am a sinful man." "I know myself, Jesus, and I see something about you. I see your power. I see your weight. I see your glory. There's something different about you, and I'm a sinful man." And all of this allowed Peter to make himself a humble man before the Lord. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a fantastic combination. To understand that Jesus is Lord, to see yourself as a human being, as a sinful human being, and to allow it all to make you humble before the Lord. It's a theme I try to remember a lot in my personal life. I guess I got to leave it up to the Lord and others to decide how successful I am with it. Ladies and gentlemen, I know there's something. You need to stay humble. This is the verse that I cannot get away from. It's been impressed in my mind for decades in my Christian life. I cannot get away from this. I don't want to get away from it. I won't say that it haunts me, but it's always there. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And there's something about Peter crouched down at the feet of Jesus. I don't know if he was crying, but he was shaking at his knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." There's something very moving about all of that. And look at what Jesus' response was. Well, before I look at Jesus' response, how about this? Was Peter's prayer good there? I think that's a good prayer. But how about this? Can I dare to improve upon Peter's prayer? May I improve upon Peter's prayer? Just for, I'll let you decide if it's an improvement or not. Here's an improvement upon Peter's prayer. This one right here. "Come nearer to me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." Can you receive that? Can you realize you, who you are in your humility, and just say to the Lord, "Come nearer to me, for I am a sinful person, O Lord." Well, let's look at Jesus' response. Verse 10. "And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, 'Do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men.' So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him." You see, when Jesus told Simon, or spoke to Simon, I should say, he said two things. First of all, do not be afraid. From what I understand, the phrasing, the original Greek, really has the idea of stop being afraid. In other words, okay, Peter, I appreciate it. I appreciate your trembling hands there at me now. Stop it. Stop being afraid. Secondly, he says, don't worry about it. From now on, you will catch men. Now, think about it. I got to take it that Peter was a fairly successful person in his business. I don't know if he was wildly successful. He has three associates. You know, the guys there with him, he has associates in his work. I'm taking it that he's at least moderately successful. He knew something about catching fish, but this is what he understood. He understood that with the direction of Jesus, everything would be different. Now, transfer that over to the idea of catching men. You see, you can do something in your own strength and your own wisdom, but nothing compared to what it is when your work is really directed by Jesus. Jesus said to Peter, "I want you now to catch men." And what did they do? Verse 11, it's really remarkable. It says this, "They forsook all and followed him." They brought the boats to shore and they forsook all. What's included in the all there? All the fish they just caught. Now, isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? Why didn't Peter say something like this to Jesus? "Okay, Jesus, this is amazing. Another couple weeks of fishing like this and we're set. Then we can really accomplish it." No, it wasn't that at all. He said, "No, I'm going to forsake all and follow you." Now, they followed him in the way that students followed their rabbi in those days. You see, in some ways, you could say that Jesus offered them a traditional education at the feet of a rabbi. This is what rabbis did back then. When you wanted to train other people, you didn't send them off to a seminary or even to a Bible school. What you did was you had them basically shadow somebody. They would learn, but they would learn not so much on a classroom model, but as an apprenticeship model. That's just the structure that they used back then. So he says, "Okay, we want to enlist in your school, Jesus. We want to follow you. We want to recognize you as our rabbi." And that's what they did. So friends, there's going to come up some more here. We just have a few along the way. Later on in the chapter, we're going to see a guy named Matthew or Levi get called. But right now, you just have a few disciples following Jesus. Peter or Simon, his brother Andrew, he's in the picture, though Luke doesn't mention him. And then James and John, you have these four following Jesus. And they're going to follow him all the way through the book of Acts. This is the beginning of something very, very good. So let's see what happens as they go on here. Verse 12. "And it happened when he was in a certain city that, behold, a man who was full of leprosy saw Jesus, and he fell on his face and implored him, saying, 'Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean.'" Now, again, I just sort of put myself in the sandals of Peter and Andrew and James and John following Jesus. Okay, hot dog, Jesus, we're following you. And they're thinking it's all going to be about tremendous teaching and all the wonderful things. And one of the first encounters they have was with a disgusting leper. When I say disgusting, I mean disgusting. Because notice something, Luke, who was a physician, tells us in verse 12, a man who was full of leprosy saw Jesus. Now, this is what you should know, that when the Bible uses the term leprosy, it's actually using a term that was used to describe several different diseases. Some of them would be as bad as what we might call eczema or psoriasis. So you might say, well, that's not so bad. The guy has a bad case of psoriasis. No, that's not the issue. When Luke uses the terminology, he was full of leprosy, he's deliberately tipping us off that Jesus is meeting up with a man who was full of what we would call today in the modern world Hansen's disease, which is a terrible, flesh-eating, defiguring of body. And might I say this, not only a body, but a spirit. It defigures a person on the outside and on the inside, at least normally it does, until that person dies. It's a horrible disease. So what did I do in this teaching? I did a little Google search. Leprosy. Google images. I don't recommend it. It's awful. But friends, you're talking about things that make people feel and seem grotesque. Let me read you something from William Barclay, who does an excellent job of historical research here. He says here, quoting, "In Palestine, there were two kinds of leprosy. There was one which was rather like a very bad skin disease, and it was the less serious of the two. There was one in which the disease, starting from a small spot, ate away the flesh until the wretched sufferer was left with only the stump of a hand or a leg. It was literally a living death. And because of this, leprosy was seen, first of all, as being an unbelievable curse of God, and anybody who was a leper was an utter social outcast. Rabbis used to brag about how poorly they treated lepers. One man said, whenever I see a leper on the street, I start throwing rocks at him until he runs away. Another man said, I won't even buy an egg on a street if there's a leper on the same street. They were so hated, so reviled, that again, it was very, very significant, not just in body, but in soul. And for these reasons, leprosy was considered to be a picture of sin and its effects. It's contagious. It's terribly debilitating. It corrupts the victim, and it makes him essentially dead while alive. So lepers were rejected and scorned. Nevertheless, this leper did what? This leper came to Jesus. My friend, that's wonderful that this leper took the initiative to do it. This leper knew how terrible his problem was, yet he still came to Jesus. He knew that everybody would have considered his condition hopeless, because that was the other thing about leprosy. It never got better. Never. It wasn't these things, well, you know, the leper got better. It just didn't work that way. If you had leprosy, you were done with. He had no one who would take him to Jesus. He had no previous example of Jesus healing a leper. He couldn't read, Jesus, this guy heals lots of lepers. No, as far as we know in the gospel account, this is the very first one. He had no promise from Jesus that Jesus would heal him. He had no invitation from Jesus or the disciples. And he must have felt ashamed and all alone in the midst of that crowd. Yet what did he do? Verse 12 tells us that he came to Jesus and he said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. That's glorious. He had not a single doubt about the ability of Jesus to heal. His only question was whether or not Jesus was willing. But ladies, that's a pretty big deal to look at a man and say, look, I believe you can cure the incurable. You can do what nobody else can do. My condition is absolutely impossible with man, but I believe it's possible with you. Leprosy was so hopeless in the ancient world that healing a leper was compared to raising the dead. Yet the leper said, Jesus, all I need is for you to be willing. And so the leper wanted more than healing, though. Did you see what it said in the verse? Did you notice that? Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Isn't this interesting on a few levels? Now, first of all, I'm sure he had reference to his biological condition. I don't have any doubt that that was the first and foremost on his mind. But there was also something else. The leper was terribly stigmatized as being unclean. That's what lepers had to cry out as they walked through the streets. You see, because a leper would defile everybody around them, they had to announce their presence so that the good, decent people could get out of the way. So what did lepers cry out as they went down the street? Unclean! Unclean! This man wanted more than physical healing. He wanted to feel clean. He wanted to feel whole again. He said, Lord, if you're willing, you can do it. Let me give you another quote from William Barclay. Barclay quoted a man named Dr. A.B. McDonald, who was in charge of a leper colony. And this is what he says, quote, "The leper is sick in mind as well as body. For some reason, there is an attitude to leprosy different from the attitude to any other disfiguring disease. It is associated with shame and horror, and it carries in some mysterious way a sense of guilt. Shunned and despised, frequently do lepers consider taking their own lives, and some do." That's what this man lived with. Verse 13, if you mark up your Bible, you got to mark verse 13. "And he put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed." Isn't that beautiful? I'm willing. That was the only thing you wondered about. Jesus smiling big. "You don't have any doubt about my power on this one." Leper, no, no doubt about your power. "I just want to know if you're willing." And he says, "Oh yes, I'm willing." And then he reached out and he touched him and he was cleansed. And friends, you realize how glorious this was? First of all, because it was absolutely forbidden to touch a leper. Absolutely forbidden. You could not touch a leper without becoming ceremonially unclean. If you're ceremonially unclean, you couldn't participate in the rituals of Israel. You couldn't go to synagogue. You couldn't do these things until you went through all the ceremonies and a certain amount of time for your ceremonial purification. You couldn't touch lepers. It was absolutely forbidden. This man had not received a loving touch from anybody for the longest time. And Jesus could have healed this man in any conceivable way. Jesus could have said a word and the man would be healed. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus could have thought a thought and the man would have been healed. But what did he do? He said, no, you need a touch. When's the last time you had a loving touch? And he put his hand on him. He didn't just say, you're healed. What did he say? You're clean. You're cleansed. Friends, how wonderful is that? For that man to receive that at that moment, he's clean. And immediately it says the leprosy left him. Now, you know, it was against the ceremonial laws for Jesus to touch him. But here's the problem. As soon as Jesus touched him, he destroyed the evidence of the crime, didn't he? Jesus could say, leper? What leper? I didn't touch a leper. As soon as I touched him, he was clean. And he was. Verse 14. "And he charged him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing as a testimony to them, just as Moses commanded." Don't tell anybody. Jesus was very conscious of timing in his ministry. And he knew that he had a certain amount of timing until the time that he went to the cross. There's a lot of different reasons for that, but I won't discuss them now. But Jesus was just very conscious of timing in his ministry. He did not want messianic fervor and expectation to get ahead of things. And so there were many times when Jesus healed somebody. Now, why don't you keep this down? Keep this quiet. Let's not make this so public. I don't want the fervor to get going too much. He told him to keep it quiet. Verse 14, "But go and show yourself to the priest." Jesus commanded the man to give a testimony to the priest. And friends, that was a remarkable testimony, because in the book of Leviticus chapter 14, there are special ceremonies that are to be conducted on the cleansing of a leper. I won't get into what they are. They're fairly complicated. But the priest would have to open up the scroll. And can you imagine him blowing the dust off of that scroll? "We've never done this ceremony before. A leper's healed somewhere? This is crazy. We're doing this ceremony? We never do this ceremony." But it made the man's healing public in the right way. Now look at verse 15. "However, The report went around concerning him all the more, and great multitudes came together to hear and to be healed of him of their infirmities. The news of the remarkable healing of the leper became widely known. Now, Luke doesn't specifically tell us that it was the leper who made it known. But Mark in his gospel rats the guy out. It was the leper who did it. You know, I just find this very fascinating, don't you? Come on, you got to admit, this is a strange thing. That the man Jesus told, don't say anything, he went out and he told everybody. And us, to whom Jesus says, go out and tell everybody, we often tell nobody. That's just strange, isn't it? Lord, help us. Lord, help us. But it's beautiful. Verse 15, great multitudes came together to hear and be healed of him by their infirmities. You see, Jesus is making it clear, I'm the Messiah, and I have these credentials because I heal. Isaiah chapter 35, verse 5 says this, then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For water shall burst forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. That's Isaiah prophetically speaking of the ministry of the Messiah. And one of the great reasons why Jesus did his miraculous ministry was to announce, I'm here as the Messiah. But please, I want you to understand something about Jesus' miraculous ministry. Even though it was real, even though it was massive, even though it announced who he was, in some sense, in the mind of the people who saw that ministry, it was small potatoes. This is how they thought. You have all this power as the Messiah. You can call down fire from heaven. Why aren't you doing some absolutely awesome miracles against the Roman legions that occupy our lands? That's the kind of miracle we want to see. Why don't you do some miracles like that? Miracles of power, miracles of overcoming the oppression, on and on. And they would say, you use this miraculous power to heal a couple of lepers? So what? You minister to some blind folk? Okay, great, we still got more blind people. But Jesus wanted to show something. He wanted to show that the power of the Messiah is here, and it's here to compassionately minister to each individual hurting heart. That's true today. He's here. And he's here to speak to each individual heart. Let's finish with verse 16. So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. Isn't that great? In this season of increasing popularity with Jesus' ministry, when the crowds are bigger, when the pressures are greater, what did he do? He often went into the wilderness to pray. The demands of life pushed Jesus to more prayer. Jesus would have been the first guy to say, or hypothetically, I'm so busy, I don't have time to pray. Instead, he turned it around. What did he say? I'm so busy, I must pray. So he often withdrew into the wilderness to pray. So should it be for us. We talk a lot about it, about how our world is so pressure-packed and so filled with, you know, stress and different this and, oh, you know, our great-grandparents, they knew nothing, on and on and on. I don't know if it's true or not. But this is what I do know. The greater the stressors and the pressures of life, it should drive us to the throne of Jesus. It's a good point for us to end. We'll pick up the rest of the chapter next time.
There's much more Pastor David would like to share with you, but we've run out of time for today. This has been another edition of Enduring Word, the radio ministry of David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California. Pastor David will continue teaching verse by verse through the Gospel of Luke next time. You can order today's message for free by emailing us at radio@enduringword.com. Again, that address is radio@enduringword.com. Sometimes it is just easier to call. Our phone number here at the church is 805-730-1400. We'll be happy to help you. Again, that number to call is 805-730-1400. Now, here's Pastor David with some great information about the Enduring Word Commentary Series.
Hi, this is Pastor David Guzik. Over the years, God has led me to write simple Bible commentary through almost the whole Bible. At EnduringWord.com, you'll find free Bible resources that'll help you as you study God's Word. We're making these commentaries available in written format as well as audio. Here's Josh with more information about how you can support Enduring Word.
Thanks, Pastor David. We'd like to encourage you to consider supporting Enduring Word by partnering with us with a one-time gift or monthly donation. Your support helps this program extend its reach worldwide. Well, that's all the time we have for today. From all of the production team here at Enduring Word, we want to say thank you for tuning in. Next time, Pastor David will continue teaching through the Gospel of Luke. That's next time on Enduring Word.